Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Health Chat. I am Lina Ahmadu. Now, did you know that that 5 billion people lack access to basic surgery? That's from C-sections to hernia operations for fixing severe compound fractures. Ethiopia is the first African country with national plan to increase access to surgical care through a variety of means. And today we will discuss safe surgery and look at what is being done on the ground, in particular in Ethiopia. And joining us to do that is Dr. Malit Yigeremu Gebremariam. She is assistant professor and consultant specialist in obstetrics and gynecology, Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology with the College of Health Sciences in Addis Ababa University, Ethiopia. Dr. Malay, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And also joining us is Carla Eckert. She is Senior Director with Global Women's Health and Special Issues in Women's Health American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, a collaborating partner with JPIGO on Safe Surgery 2020 and many other programs. Carla, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So first and foremost, we understand that 5 billion people lack access to basic surgery. That's really an incredible number. Let me get your reaction first, Dr. Malet, on this number and how it translates to Africa.
Oh, it hugely translates to Africa, but what's amazing is that the global population number is 7 billion. Can you imagine that a majority of the population does not have access to safe surgery? And Africa, I think more than 95% is in Africa. Mm.
So tell us about what is happening in Ethiopia. When we talk about Africa, of course, we are pretty sure that the situation is the same in Ethiopia. Tell us about some specific facts.
Yeah. Ethiopia is one of the low and middle income country, you know, with a huge population and young population, mm-hmm. carries a double burden. Like most mothers marry young, they give birth very young. Trauma is like any developing countries, road traffic accidents, violence, you know, other natural conditions that come with age, gender, and so on. Ethiopia suffers from that too. And you could not imagine when you have more than 80% of your population is rural. Yeah. You could imagine that the access to basic, efficient, effective surgical skills is almost unimaginable.
That's incredible. And Carla, I wanted to get your take on the statistics and what it means for someone like you who works in helping to improve global women's health.
Well, there's no easy answers and no magic bullets, as we know. The healthcare workforce is severely underserved with competent surgical providers. We have some new estimates out of Lancet that did a global survey that said that there should be 20 surgeons for every 100,000 population, and our current numbers are about 7. Wow. So there is a huge dearth of trained surgical providers. And then of the surgery providers that we do have, some have issues of quality that really need to be addressed that lead to morbidity, not just mortality, but morbidity issues that are severe. And we see that in Ethiopia with fistula issues. And then some other issues are there are just very few surgeons, and those surgeons are in high demand and high volume, and you can imagine that it's exhausting to try to take care of the entire population. So we're working on a number of projects. One is JPIGO's Safe Surgery 2020, to look at the ecosystem of the operating room and to try to make it more efficient, look at efficient teams, physician leadership. And then another project we're working on, ACOG, the American College, is working with the Ethiopian Society of OBGYNs, of which Dr. Mollet is the vice president, to make sure that we have a strong and credible professional association that's advocating for high-quality care, surgery being among them.
That's very important indeed. And Dr. Mollet, I wanted to go to the basics in terms of some of the challenges, and Carla mentioned some of them already, but you working on the ground in Ethiopia, you talk to your colleagues, even yourself as a provider. Can you share some of the challenges that are really an impediment in finding, first of all, more qualified personnel. Just that's the very first step, I think. Like, where do you find the expertise? What are some of the reasons that you can share with us?
Yeah, this is a very good question, because one of the very reasons the Ethiopian Society of OBGYN was established was because of the gap, especially in the reproductive health and safe surgery to women in the reproductive age and beyond. We have, this is an association that has been in the last 26 years, mm-hmm. and the association has been working with the universities, the Federal Ministry of Health, all NGOs, to create a critical mass of obstetricians and gynecologists that tend to the women health in general. Mm-hmm. We are more than 300 OBGYNs in Ethiopia for a population of more than 100 million.
Wow.
So I think for the coming years, programs have to expand to keep on training qualified obstetricians. That's why we have now almost 13 programs running in the country, which were like six years ago. Mm-hmm. So you could imagine the government's commitment to increase training of qualified obstetricians by creating training institutions, which I work in one of them. But you know, training obstetrician and gynecologists is not an easy thing. You need to have a very good and dedicated faculty, training hospitals, you know, you need teaching hospitals where you have got a good caseload where you could render service as well as running training and research parallelly, and equipment supplies that should be available to give even the most basic and comprehensive obstetric care. So it is a multifaceted endeavor where you should do, including many sectors. Mm-hmm. Like if you don't have light, if you don't have electricity, if you don't have good administrators, mm-hmm. if you don't have colleagues, you know, health professionals like midwives who need to work with obstetricians, there is no way you're going to make like the global goals, you know, global standards. So I really concur with the JPAIGO, work which is doing with ECOG, mm-hmm. that's the ecosystem of the OR, which used to be like a surgical field, you know, but it's a public health challenge. You know, we need to bring the OR to be like a field where many sectors should function effectively to bring access to the majority who are dying. We have 17 million people dying from surgically preventable disease, imagine. And this problem is going to continue to 2030. Is that not? So that is what the evidence shows. So especially this is going to affect low-income countries like Ethiopia. So we have to be professional associations, policymakers, all stakeholders should be ready to handle this. And this is the most cost-effective way. Mm-hmm. People mount it like it is as good as a program like immunization, as good as a program like HIV treatment. The cost you need to invest for each disability-adjusted life years, for each year, if you invest $10 to $100, you could meet this. So it is a very attractive initiative, I think, and it is doable for most developing countries. Mm-hmm. And it spills over to every level, wherever your geographical location is, whether you are in the rural area, urban area, whether you are educated or not. So it is, in a way, assuring equity, you know, which is what we are all getting for.
Equity is so important. And Carla, I wanted you to take us through the steps with regards to this program, Safe Surgery 2020. Where does the program start? Where does it start? What is the very first step in terms of making sure that the OR is, we create that ecosystem in the OR to improve the surgeries for patients? So where do we start in the process?
Well, I have a colleague who likes to say that the surgeon is no longer a technician. They have to be a leader. And in Ethiopia in specific, the program started there to talk about leadership of the surgeon in the OR. You know, you can have all the people in the room and still not get it right.
Mm-hmm.
You can have the anesthetist, the nurse, the bed, the patient, the surgeon, and communication can still break down.
Mm-hmm.
It can still go wrong. You may not have handoffs. You may not have appropriate response to complications. So it really has to be a high-functioning team. And we know from all our sports analogies that a high-functioning team means that you practice,
mm-hmm.
that you create drills,
mm-hmm.
that you set up systems that fail so that you can learn from them, and that you create leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the first step of this program in Ethiopia. The other challenge, I think, about surgery is that it encompasses many specialties.
Yes.
So a lot of people, when we talk about safe surgery, get glassy-eyed. You know, what do you mean? That's so complex. We're talking about everything. How do you talk about everything? You know, so what we have done is say, let's look at C-section as a bellwether essential surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can make that go right, then many other surgeries will benefit from the same work. So let's look at a woman in obstructed labor needing a C-section.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at postpartum hemorrhage. Let's create the drills, the simulations, put together teams, talk about communication, situational analysis, and mm-hmm. leadership. And as much as that doesn't sound technical and it doesn't sound clinical, it doesn't sound like what doctors should be spending their time doing.
Yes.
It is actually fundamental to making the OR a more efficient and worthwhile place. We also know that women know when quality is bad. The skilled birth attendant number in Ethiopia is, I couldn't remember, Dr. Mollett, what was that number? 17%, I think you said?
Yeah, but now they are replaced by the community, like workers.
Community health workers.
Right. Yes, they are more than now 32,000. Like, it's a very big workforce that is literally carrying on the primary health care.
And even if women get antenatal care, they still won't come into a facility to give birth. And we're finding that that's because women know the quality is poor.
Mm-hmm.
Or in some cases, like in Nigeria, which is not Ethiopia, but I was in Nigeria, they would say, you know, we'd come, but there are no lights. So why would we come to a dark place to give birth when we can be at home giving birth? And so we also know that it isn't also about good technical surgery. It's about a quality of care and life afterwards, before and after. And so, again, it is complex. And I think that trying to go at it from not just the clinical side is actually quite refreshing and innovative.
And Dr. Mali, did you want to add something? And when I'm thinking about the fundamental aspect of safe surgeries in terms of your context where you work, what do you see as a fundamental aspect?
I think the most important and fundamental aspect of safe surgery is the setting that you create for your clients.
Okay.
Like, I'm an obstetrician and gynecologist, and my clients, they want to see like female health providers, you know.
The gender
is a very important issue, I mean. And they want to be, like, no, don't create a hospitalized situation, you know, they feel to be at home. So what mm-hmm. the Ethiopian government and the Ethiopian Society of OBGYN created or are working even is that they are creating, like, stay homes, like maternity homes, that mother can come, if they can come from a very rural and remote areas, they could stay around the time of delivery, okay? And they will be like, they create a kind of home situation. And when the delivery is near, they are closer to the hospital. So it has created a huge acceptance by the community
mm-hmm.
that most health professionals are female, like the midwives, the nurses.
Yes.
And the hospital has created a kind of home situation where their family come in, they could eat whatever they like, and mm-hmm. they will be just cared in those maternity hospitals until the time of delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And when delivery happens, you know, they have the necessary equipments with all the sterilization and everything in place.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a team of surgical workers, you know, surgery.
Yes.
It's a teamwork. And the surgeon definitely leads. So having a model like this, especially in a rural setup like Ethiopia,
mm-hmm.
makes safe surgery a very acceptable, cost-effective, and affordable endeavor to take to take over.
So, Carla, what is the role that your organization is playing in terms of being part of this program?
So the American College of OBGYN has been working with the Ethiopian Society of OBGYN for the last 2 years to work on capability building. And so there's a difference, I think, between capacity building, which is when you train someone to do something, and capability training, which is where you consult with your peers so that everyone comes out with the capable of doing whatever it is they're choosing to do. In specific, in Ethiopia, we've been working on creating a very advanced research journal, which has just published 2 volumes, working with our teams on continuing medical education, both in a person and online, so that we can hold our medical professionals accountable to continuing education. We have been working on a certification and exam of residence, which is Dr. Mollett's area, where she is working to examine whether or not the residents coming out of school have learned what we thought they should learn. And we've been working on the residency programs to help them harmonize the curriculums so that when we're, say, that an Ethiopian OBGYN medical doctor has graduated from the residency program, we know what that means. We know what's been covered. And there is very good confidence in the quality of that professional, all to benefit everyone, right? I mean, it's to benefit the Ethiopian society, the Ethiopian cadre of OBGYN doctors. But what we're finding, surprisingly and happily, is that ophthalmologists are interested in this same issue, and dentists are interested in the same issue, and the cardiac thoracic surgeons are interested in the same. So it's a great follow-on, I think, to, as I've said, if you create the capability and the roadmap of the Ethiopian society, how many others will benefit?
That's a good point. Very, very good point. And we're going to take a short break and continue this very interesting discussion. I'm learning a lot right now, and I think that this is, we don't take, it seems like in the conversation around health, we don't take too much, enough time to talk about safe surgery, which is so critical. And I'm really glad we're having this discussion. So we're going to take a short break and come back and continue our discussion with our guest, Dr. Malik Gebremariam and Carla Eckhart. Well, we will be right back. Don't go away.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one I judge. This one I judge.
Every show brings you the best music from across the continent, old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, let's be upfront.
There's a lot to talk about.
We need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
Upfront is a show where we look at issues that affect Africa's youth,
giving you an opportunity to express yourself as you connect with other youth around the continent.
In this interconnected world, we share a destiny. So let us share our solutions to issues like unemployment,
education reform,
elections,
free speech,
and many others.
Nothing is off the table.
Nothing is off the table.
Absolutely nothing is off the table.
It's Upfront, Wednesdays at 1730 UTC, Saturday at 1900 UTC,
and Sunday at 1930 UTC,
right here on VOA Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Welcome back to Health Chat. I'm Lina Ormudu. For those of you joining us late, tonight we are discussing safe surgery. And my guests are Dr. Male Yigeremu Gebremariam. She is assistant professor and consultant specialist in obstetrics and gynecology, Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the College of Health Sciences in Addis Ababa University in Ethiopia. And Carla Eckert is senior director of Global Women's Health and Special Issues in Women's Health, American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. So, ladies, such an important topic. Again, I like to emphasize that because safe surgery is so needed. Now, let's talk about the type of surgeries that are being conducted or that the providers or the residents and this program is putting at the forefront.
Yeah, generally, safe surgery encompasses a diverse procedures that are meant to save life and offer quality surgery. But if you focus on the women health, you know, women carry multiple burdens. You know, they are kids. We don't call them women, but they are kids. You know, girls. Yes. As a girl, they incur trauma. They incur violence. They incur acute abdominal emergencies, like any boy does. Okay, when they are teenagers, physiologically women are the child bearers, you know, so pregnancy puts women at an increased risk of morbidity and mortality. And I say that there is no other intervention as effective as safe surgery that gives you a 200% impact, you know, like when you do cesarean section, which is my favorite part of safe surgery. You know, you do offer timely cesarean section, you save two lives. There is no other area that you would be like benefiting the community, you know, than a cesarean section. If you take like hernia repairs, you know, females also suffer from hernia surgeries, which is a very simple surgery. And I think safe surgery in a wider perspective benefits most women as a person, as a mother, you know, or as a victim of any of the conflicts that might arise. So I think cesarean section, hernia repair, fracture, you know, and all such things, they are the basic principles in the safe surgery.
Very important. So Carla, what is, let me have your reaction on this, on the same question. And she talked about one of her favorites is C-section. What about you? What is your favorite type of surgery? That's very, very, very simple question.
Well, I think there are many surgeries that are incredibly beneficial. And as Dr. Mollett said, also simple. We know that people will not access care if they don't believe in the quality of care, which we've said before. And they will not access surgery if they don't think that they will come out better than they went in.
Better, yes.
So we know that if we can provide safe surgery, women will access surgery not only in labor, but there are other times when they could avoid, avoid hysterectomy by having a B. Lynch suture, which sounds very technical, or they could have a cesarean hysterectomy and avoid mortality or death. You know, there's so many times where surgery can intervene to either save your life or improve your health, but people won't seek it out if they don't trust the system. So we have to really offer a very confident, safe surgical program nationally in public health systems, in private health systems, mm-hmm. so that people come in so that they can see a fistula repair, while maybe complex, is not life-threatening, but can change the quality of your life so much if you're willing to come in, go through the surgery, and then have that change.
Now, when we look at surgery in general, there's so much that comes into play, right?
Yeah.
And one of the issues that we know is anesthesia, right? And then some people even can die from anesthesia. So anesthesia is such a critical part of the whole process. How is anesthesia available? What is the availability of anesthesia? And what is the biggest barrier to accessing anesthesia? And how can other partners in global health, whether it's public or private, help combat this problem?
You cannot have surgery without anesthesia.
Yes, indeed.
It is part and parcel of safe surgery. You know, and any surgeon or any surgical training without anesthesia training, it is useless, you could imagine. So, regarding anesthesia, safe anesthesia, there are many safe anesthesia techniques. Most of the common surgeries, they need a basic set of anesthesia skills. You know, patients, they could get local pain relief.
Mm-hmm.
They could get regional pain relief, like they could be like anesthetized waist down, like when you do cesarean section.
Mm-hmm.
You could do just one limb anesthesia, just if you have a fracture or anything to repair on one area. Or you could get a general anesthesia, which usually needs medication and also a machine.
Yes.
Yeah. So the anesthesia training, both for the basic anesthetist training and anesthesiologist training, should be part of safe surgery, because without safe anesthesia, you cannot conduct safe surgery. It's very basic. And the most deterring thing is the number of anesthetists in most low-income countries is very low. It's very sad. People talk about surgeons, obstetricians, but without having anesthetists and anesthesiologists, you cannot think of having a safe surgery. So training institutions, they should parallelly have anesthesia training as they want to have surgery trainings, obstetrics trainings, trauma trainings.
Mm-hmm.
It is part and parcel of all emergency surgical trainings. So it's very basic, and the number is very low.
There are some great innovations going on in anesthesia now as well. There's a machine that doesn't require electricity nor oxygen tanks, which is new. Gradient has put that into the marketplace, and so it takes the oxygen from the room and concentrates it.
Yes.
So, one of the barriers is that canister of oxygen that is very hard to get places. So this is a big innovation. And running the anesthesia machine on battery.
Okay.
When the electricity goes out, your surgery can go terribly wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so having a machine that isn't impacted by electrical outages is also quite innovative.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing that is happening is task shifting in anesthesia in most professional cadres. There is an anesthesiologist, but now there are nurse anesthetists also being credentialed in many countries, which is incredibly helpful to the paucity of healthcare workforce
that's a great
in that area.
It's a great strategy
to train
nurses and others to be able to do that. That's really interesting.
Hmm.
And also we're doing a lot more with combat and like crisis medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dr. Mollett was saying, you can anesthetize a particular portion of someone or a limb or a region. And so we're learning that from the field, from combat and military and crisis situations, and trying to get that into hospitals and tertiary care centers. If an anesthetist is not available and surgery is a life-saving opportunity, you should have a different option.
Okay. So, ladies, are we getting ready to wrap? And actually, I want to thank you for coming today. It was nice to have you with us today, Dr. Malet and Carla. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
It was a pleasure being here.
Thanks to all of you for joining us on this edition of Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Armudu, in Washington, with producer Jackson Munganyi, and Skip, our technician. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest